place, it might be nice to get Hamilton on your side. It might be nice, it might be nice to get Hamilton on your side.
A show that looks at Kansas City baseball's past, present, and future.
High fly ball. Motley going back to the track. No outs to go. The Royals have won the 1985 World Series.
Davis comes to the plate. Strike three called. It's over. They've done it. The Royals are World Series champions. The world champion Kansas City Royals.
This is the Kansas City Baseball Vault.
Ladies and gentlemen, welcome in to the Kansas City Baseball Vault, brought to you by Kelly's Westport Inn, Baseball Prospectus affiliate. Folks, we have a little bit of show-related news to bring to you, and then we've got some stuff to talk about. The Royals have actually made a few moves and have given us stuff to discuss on this show as we continue headlong into this hot stove season. So first, as always, introductions, of course. I am Jeff Hur, and with me as always is the man who needs no introduction, but we're going to give him one anyway, Michael Engel. Mike, how are you doing? I want winter to just hurry up and be over with. we're basically not even started yet, and I already want it gone.
Yeah. They're apparently they have to do some work on the heat in my building at work. So like Tuesday they're just not gonna be on. So it's like, cool, thanks. That's really nice. Couldn't have waited until I left town for Christmas to see family to do that. No. Gotta do it in a couple days. Yeah. Today was nice though. It was like 50 degrees, so I don't know what it's gonna do tomorrow, but yeah, winter sucks. Not a fan.
Yes, it does. Nor am I. So, as we said, a little bit of show-related news. So, we have been informed, this was last week, that Baseball Prospectus, who they'd been going through some management changes, and it was actually, they have now been purchased by what was kind of the senior staff at BP. And so they're kind of making some changes, redesigning things, and you know, looking at their business plan, how they want to go about things. And they've decided that they are going to no longer have the individual team sites. So BP Kansas City, as you know it today, will not be moving forward. So
as of the end of the year, pretty much.
Yes.
Yeah.
And so it sounds ominous, but you know, and everyone's still kind of looking at options, and we're still, you know, figuring everything out and how it's all going to work. But essentially, as far as we know it right now, there really shouldn't be too much of a change. You know, BP, who's been great this whole time we've been affiliated with them, still wants all of us to stick around and to contribute to the main site. The difference is it just wouldn't be stuff that's featured on a team-specific site. It would just go straight to the main site and be part of that content. So we're not exactly sure the form that that's going to take, just because, I don't know, the BP themselves are quite sure. Everyone's still kind of working it out, how it's all going to flow and how everything's going to work through, et cetera. And it'll be similar for the podcast. You know, instead of having a team individual podcast thing, as far as we know right now, the plan is to kind of have just a consolidated all the podcasts in one place type of thing. So, and regardless of whether it would be at BP Kansas City or someplace else, you know, with the any subscriptions that you have to the show, on whether it be on iTunes or, you know, Stitcher or wherever it is, then those are likely going to remain unchanged. So the content and everything that you've grown used to, both from the podcast and from the site, will still be around. It'll just be a matter of, you know, how you consume it will be slightly different. So, and for the podcast, maybe not even different at all.
Right. So just you a little bit of literally notice no difference in how you get us into your ear holes, basically.
Indeed. Yep. So if you just wanted to put that out there. So if you hear or see some things about, you know, how BP can, or BP is changing things, et cetera, then that's what's going on, kind of behind the scenes.
Yep. So and you really should be following guys like Dave Lesky and Craig Brown and Clint Scholes and all of them already anyhow. So whatever they do put on for what we call the mothership, they will certainly be posting their links. Some of them may or may not be behind the paywall. I would say that if you are interested in baseball and the stuff that we talk about, you're probably going to want a Baseball Perspective subscription anyway. So, you know, it's always been good info from the first day I found it. So, always been pretty happy with the coverage and everything. But yeah, it is a shift. Most of those guys are kind of still mulling the options about how they would contribute, but everybody's pretty much been invited to continue to contribute to BP. It just wouldn't be specific to a Kansas City theme site. And really, they only had, I think, 8 team sites that got off the ground. And it just it either made sense to expand all the way or retract, and they've decided to kind of pull it back. But everybody kind of gets to stick around, so who wants to, at least. So, yeah, it's news, but, you know, if anything changes on our end from a podcast perspective, we're still kind of considering, still getting some info and everything, but it's probably not going to change. And if it does change, you're going to find out by following us on Twitter at KC Baseball Vault, and we'll definitely let you know. But for now, if you've subscribed through iTunes or whatever, that should not change. So shouldn't be any difference.
Indeed. So now that we got that piece of house cleaning cleared up, moving on to Royals topics now. So first, we're going to start with a few moves that they made, and sort of, I guess you could say, or moves they didn't make, chose not to make. And we were kind of talking about this before the show, and Mike, I think you can probably explain it better than I can, because you probably have a little bit better of a grasp on this. But essentially, there are 4 players that they didn't, that the Royals didn't tender a contract to. So I'll let you kind of explain it, because I think you did better than I would.
So the last episode, we were talking about guys who the Royals needed to offer arbitration to, or had that option. So like guys like Brian Flynn, Jesse Hahn, Chesler Cuthbert, they offered them all contract offers and avoided arbitration with them, which at that point tendered them a contract. But I always forget this. Every year I forget this, that there are still minor leaguers and guys who aren't necessarily up for arbitration as far as the salary negotiation part, who are still eligible and still need to be tendered the contract. And so the Royals, they ended up not tendering contracts to Samir Duenas, Bubba Starling, Jason Adam, and Andres Machado, which instead of a designation for assignment, it just made them free agents. They were just not tendered contracts. Machado's already re-signed, but this basically clears 4 spots off of the 40-man roster. The other guys, Adam, Starling, and Duenas, are all still out there, but the Royals intend to re-sign all of them to minor league deals. It's just a matter of, you know, Duenas doesn't really have a spot, but they want to keep him in the organization. Bubba's kind of in a roster crunch because the Royals have 9 billion outfielders as it is, and more on that in a minute. And Jason Adam is, you know, another guy that they kind of figured is probably safe to go with this. So I would guess probably in the next week or so, you'll probably see those guys start to come back to the fold. But that put the Royals 40-man roster at 36 2 weeks ago, and they've already kind of started to refill those spots. So, you know, and I don't know. I have a theory, and I haven't been able to check on this, and I mentioned before the show that probably we shouldn't even talk about it, but now that I'm started, why not? I don't know if it's going to be a Rule 5 thing. Like, right after the Rule 5 draft, they re-sign these guys. And right now, it just means that teams can't draft them. But I don't know. I guess we'll see. I'll have to ask around and see if I can figure that out. But yeah, expect Bubba Starling and all those guys to probably come back. But technically, they are free agents, so there's nothing that means they have to come back to the Royals. But they currently are off the 40-man roster. The Royals have the intent to bring them back, but we will have to see if that actually happens or not. If not, I mean, that'd be an interesting way for Bubba Starling's Royals saga to end, is to just be a random Friday afternoon
with a whimper. Yeah.
Just like, oh, he's just free agent now. Okay. Huh. All right. So we will see. There's going to be more.
It would be weird, but almost fitting given how his career has gone.
Really?
To this point.
Yeah. So we'll see. They've also said that they felt like he would still be in the mix for the outfield spot, which is nice to say, but until he's actually in Kansas City in a Royals uniform, skepticism is a fair approach.
Yes, it's healthy.
Yeah. So we'll see.
Yeah. So those four players, who knows? And as you alluded to, the Royals have about 11 billion outfielders right now. So what did they do? They decided to go out and get a couple more.
Get some more. Why not?
You know, and well, they got one more who we'll get to here in a second, and then one who, not a true outfielder necessarily, more of a utility guy, and that I'm talking about Chris Owings, who they got, who's been with the Diamondbacks for his whole career so far. He's a 26-year-old kind of super utility guy. He's played all the positions, and he's just kind of your
that says it. He's
Your average utility guy. There's not a ton that you can really say, like, you know, one way or another about him. He'll probably get a decent amount of innings. You hope you're at a place where he's not starting every day at any particular position. But you know, it's good to have in a pinch if you really need to do some roster shifting because of injuries or because it's late in the game or something, and you got a guy like that who can shift around the field. It gives you some versatility. So that's nice to have. Other than that, I honestly don't know a ton about Chris Owings.
Yeah,
so I don't know.
When it popped up that they had signed him, I was thinking in the back of my head, that's pretty decent minor league signing, and then it comes out that, $3 million for a year. I'm like, oh man, I don't know what they're doing that for. He's primarily, and he's better as an outfielder, but he has played in the infield. The Royals kind of mentioned some stuff about, hey, he can play shortstop, but he hasn't played shortstop in the big leagues since 2016. So, I don't know. I don't know how that's going to work. He does have a little bit of pop to him. He hit 12 homers in 2017 in just 97 games. So there's a little bit of kind of power upside there. I think he had some wrist problems last season is something that I gathered. But, you know, he doesn't really have an elite thing about him. You know, sometimes these guys, you think like Peter O'Brien back in the day, just crazy power. And that's the upside you're kind of banking on.
Mm-hmm.
Owens just doesn't have any of that. He's kind of just been a run of the mill type of guy. He played, 147 games in 2015 and, was largely unimpressive at that point. He had 11 triples in 2016. You know, he's kind of the typical guy. He'd probably play part time, get you about, 350, 400 at bats. If you kind of move him around and everything, but yeah, I don't know. I'm just, it's
very, very Paolo Orlando-ish if he could play infield.
Yeah.
So, just kind of, okay, he might do something pretty cool once in a while, but for the most part, he's just going to be a body to fill the spot.
Just so. Not a lot of expectations. I don't know. I mean, maybe there's something there. He is, in what would be considered his prime years. It's not unheard of for a change of scenery to turn a guy into something. But I don't know. I just don't see it. And when you consider that the Twins went out and signed Ronald Torres, who was kind of bounced around but played well for the Yankees last year and played in a lot of spots, it was kind of weird. And he only signed for like $800,000. And it's like, okay, what's
wrong with this picture here?
It's like, well, I think most people would feel that Torres is a better fit, and Owens was like, I don't know. I kind of mentioned this the day of the signing, but like, who were they outbidding to give him $3 million? Yeah. I don't see it. I mean, good for him and good for his agent for getting that deal. I'm not gonna rip him and say, hey, you shouldn't get $3 million. But it's like, I don't know what the Royals are doing to do that when they're already saying that they have a cap on what they want to spend this. I mean, they say that every year, but
right.
You know,
it feels like the 2012 scenario with Jeff Francoeur, you know, where they give him a contract for 2-year contract, wasn't it, for $13 million or something like that?
Mm-hmm.
And that. It was just like, did you really need to go that high? Was anybody else going to outbid you for that? You know, now they offered the same to Melky Cabrera and they did get outbid. So that's, you know, understandable. But Francoeur would, and honestly, you know, Francoeur is better than Chris Owings, obviously, but even given what he was. It is a little weird when you see kind of a strange gap in between two players like that, that you would think shouldn't necessarily be there or be that wide. But
yeah. And just for like, just as comparison, John Jay last year signed for $3 million. And granted, that was much later in the process, but it's still for $3 million. And John Jay, I would say, is a better player than Chris Owings was.
He is a proven everyday major
flexibility
leader.
But he definitely has like contact and decent defense and speed and can draw walks and get on base, and Owings kind of never has done much of any of that. So I don't know, it's a very odd transaction to me. Not sure why they're doing it, but you know, whatever, it's what happened. They've done it.
We've said it before,
these things.
And we'll say it again. There's no such thing as a bad 1-year contract. So
yeah, I guess.
In theory, I suppose. We'll add that little piece.
They're not hampered. It is only $3 million. You know, if they're really going to go ahead and fill the gaps that they need to, and they're willing to actually bump up the payroll or not worry about it as much, fine. And in the end, in 2019, what are they playing for? You know, if they see a 12-game improvement, that gets them to 70 wins. So, I mean, it's like, it's not like we're 2013 and looking for the playoffs or anything. It's a rebuilding year. It's a rebuilding period, but it's also one of those things. And I think we'll get to that in a minute, 'cause I have a thought. But it's also something that down the line, it might, you know, these things can matter. I mean, we've seen it before where the Royals jumped in and they had to sign Bruce Chen a few years ago, and they did it before anything else settled in. And by the end of it, it looked like their contract offer to Bruce Chen was a little high for, you know, what other teams were paying for similar or even better players. And I think that's probably going to be the same here, which in a general sense is fine. I'm fine if the players are getting paid, but when you've already said that, like, you basically have $10 million to work with this offseason, you give $3 million of it to Chris Owings, it's just like, how are you using your resources? It's very weird. So,
very strange.
We'll see what he does, I guess. But I don't know. It's a weird deal, but good for him. Good for his agent. Good for his family. You know, happy for him.
Yeah.
Don't get it.
Don't get it. One thing I do get that was a very Royalsy move is the next move that they did. In addition to Chris Owings, they got another outfielder, Billy Hamilton. So you may recall hearing that name from the last few years. And I mean, not the last few years, but a few years ago, I should have said, he was pretty high ranked prospect, top 100. I think you said 14 in 2012. Is that right?
Yeah, but before the 2013 season, Baseball Prospectus had him as their 14th overall prospect. And he'd been in their top 50 four straight years. So, you know, significant some push on him. I mean, he stole like 400 bases in 500 minor league games.
Just yeah, it's
ridiculous
absurd.
Numbers. Just crazy. Side note, random side note. He's the second Billy Hamilton to play pro baseball in Kansas City. The first Billy Hamilton played for the 1888 and 1889 Kansas City Cowboys on route to a Hall of Fame career.
Look
also, a guy capable of stealing 100 bases in a season. In fact, he stole 100 bases four times in his career in 14 years. So he only played two years with the Cowboys, though.
Don't ever say Michael Engel did nothing for you, folks, because that was dropping a huge bit of knowledge on you right there. So we've had two Billy Hamiltons and two Bill Butlers who have played for a Kansas City Royals organization. How blessed are we at this particular moment?
Could not be any different. Though, I mean, yeah, old Billy Hamilton. He's one of those guys that you're like, you never really hear about him. But, yeah. But he also, you know, had a .344 batting average and you know,
for his career,
yeah,
wow.
Granted,
good for Billy Hamilton.
This is
Billy Hamilton the first.
He retired in 1901, so I mean,
yeah, I mean, it's a different era completely.
Yeah, so
literally over a century ago.
Yeah,
but anyway, little bit of
the
trivia.
Modern Billy Hamilton.
Yes. So, and Mike and I were actually, we were discussing this about the show, going down memory lane, if you will. Back in 2012, when the All-Star Game was here in Kansas City, we had, if you recall, if you've been following the show for a while, which can't believe, you know, we've been going for that long, but, you know, we had been going for a while before the All-Star Game. So we got involved with Baseball Prospectus, the start of what would, you know, end up being a very fruitful and good relationship for us, but
fruitful,
well,
beneficial,
not in the
monetary sense.
Yeah. But, so we got involved with them, and we had at the Negro League Baseball Museum, we had a little kind of symposium thing. People got up and talked, etc. We had a podcasting one that we went last, and there were other scouts from Baseball Prospectus who went up, and they were talking about, you know, just baseball in general, etc. And one of the big names that came up, and who was, because this was 2012, and like you were saying, 2012 Baseball Prospectus had him ranked really high, was Billy Hamilton, and talking about his speed. Now, I remember Kevin Goldstein, I think it was, raving about him quite a bit.
Yeah, I remember him being.
It was just like, it was unreal when you see it, and because he said that it, you know, it didn't even do him justice to see it on video. You know, when you see it in person, you really see how fast he is, and that, you know, he was saying, you know, obviously, I remember they were very, both he and Jason Parks were very adamant about not wanting to make comparisons, but bringing up certain people in the right context. And I think when, you know, he said, you know, he's not going to be Ricky Henderson, but in terms of stealing bases, he could put up Ricky Henderson like numbers if he were to get on base enough. And that was the problem. And that's what has ended up being his problem that has followed him throughout his career. He's been a solid player. He's played a lot of games for the Reds. But for someone who has that base stealing ability and who can essentially, you know, turn every single or walk into a double, then get on base, just get on base, and then you can turn it into a double. So that's a really, really good skill to have, but he hasn't been able to get on base consistently his entire career. He has a .298 on base percentage. And when that's for his career. So when you've got that tool that you really focus your game around, you need to have a high on base percentage, and he hasn't really had it. And so that's why, you know, a team like Cincinnati is okay with letting him go. And, you know, the Royals are taking a chance on him and picking him up. So it's very Royals like signing, because the Royals love speed, love defense. You know, those are kind of his two best tools in the baseball sense. So it makes a lot of sense from that standpoint when you talk about the Raiders or the Royals. And we kind of saw this coming when we heard the news about how Billy Hamilton is going to be a free agent. We were like, oh, this seems like a very Royals thing.
Yeah.
And lo and behold, they've done it. So we will we'll see how it turns out. It's I'm kind of cautiously optimistic a little bit. It's kind of a fun thing. And if he's between Billy Hamilton, Raul Mondesi, and Whit Merrifield running around, I mean, and it seems like the Royals, because we know the Royals aren't really doing, they're not really competing for a ton next year. So maybe their goal is to just get crazy and let's make a lot of fun things happen. And if that's what they want to do, then they're certainly in position to do it with these people. Are you still there?
Yeah.
Okay. Sorry, my computer flipped out for a second. I thought maybe I lost you. But
no. Nope, I'm just sitting here thinking of Hamilton lyrics to drop in and test the Venn diagram of podcast listeners, Royals fans, and fans of Lin-Manuel Miranda.
That's
I hope they're both listening.
They're both. Well, one of them is doing the podcast right now because I like all three of those. I've never seen Hamilton, of course, but
no, nobody's seen Hamilton. Nobody's actually seen Hamilton. It's like Billy Hamilton just signed for $4.25 million and he can't afford a ticket. So,
so what's your thoughts on the Billy Hamilton signing?
I mean, it's kind of similar to Owings in that it's like, who are they bidding against? I mean, you're right that it's, you know, when he became available, it was like, oh yeah. It's like I had flashbacks to when Jeff Francoeur was a free agent, and it was like, oh, Dayton's signing him. Cannot help himself. Doesn't matter. And lo and behold, Francoeur was the most obvious transaction you could have imagined. This one was very unsurprising as well. I mean, like, I'm having difficulty, like, bridging that gap between, like, not really getting the timing of it. I don't understand the money behind it. I don't understand the need for it. And still saying that Billy Hamilton's, like, not a bad player. He's not necessarily a really good player, but his skills used effectively could be really, really, you know, beneficial. The comparison I could think of is Gerard Dyson, who for a number of years, the Royals used him pretty much as well as you could. You know, they used him in late game situations. They used him as a pinch runner, defensive replacement. And if called upon, he could hit a little bit. Dyson's a little more accomplished over his career as a hitter, a little better on base, but they're very similar as far as, you know, kind of how they hit the ball. A lot of singles, a lot of triples, get on base, steal bases. Hamilton doesn't hit the ball very hard, so that's going to be kind of an issue. But I think he'll be fun. I think he'll be really, really good defensively. And that kind of puts the Royals back into the range where they, you know, they always used to have guys. Willie Wilson and Vince Coleman and Brian McCray and Lorenzo Cain and those types of players where you've got, you know, a really, really good defensive outfielder with a ton of speed. And, you know, the Royals between Alex Gordon, Billy Hamilton, and Brett Phillips, if he's who ends up being in right field, that's a really good defensive outfield. They're not going to hit a whole lot, but it's really good defensively. And, you know, I think it could be entertaining. And if you've got Hamilton hitting ninth, you turn it over to Whit Merrifield and Alberto Mondesi, you know, that could be a lot of fun to kind of see that on the base paths. But, you know, it's like the adage, you can't steal first base. And Hamilton really does need to be getting on base a little bit more. You know, Dyson, for instance, would walk about 8.4% of the time based on his career numbers. Hamilton's at 6.9, which isn't like, it's not Alcides Escobar or Salvador Perez territory in the threes and fours, but you know, you'd really like to see someone like Hamilton get a lot more out of those opportunities and try to get on base a lot more. He strikes out more than Dyson ever did. You know, their BABIP's about the same. It's just, you know, he's probably going to be their everyday center fielder. And, you know, I don't know that they really needed to do that. They got Brian Goodwin, they got Brett Phillips. In a pinch, Alex Gordon could play it. Rosel Herrera has played it. So they've got a ton of outfielders, and they just added another one. So I'm not really sure how it's going to work out. The other thing is, you know, like I said, I don't know who they were bidding against. When you look at it, John Jay, like I said, last year, $3 million. John Jay, probably a more complete player than Hamilton. But when you also look at it from the standpoint of like a utility guy and an outfielder, Neil Walker last year made like $4.5 million. So last offseason, you could have Neil Walker and John Jay for the same amount you got for, you know, Billy Hamilton and Chris Owings. I was like, that's a pretty easy scale to pick a side on. It's, you know, Walker and Jay is a much better combo. But, you know, Hamilton and Owings are both guys in, you know, the 27, 28 year old range, and maybe there's a little bit something there. You know, the one thing that I'm worried about, though, is if the Royals are really concerned about payroll, is if it turns out that, let's say, they want to move Ian Kennedy's contract. Like, they say they want to be around $90 million, and they're at about $86, $87 million right now. So if they want to move Ian Kennedy's contract, I'd really hate for them to have to trade a guy in their top 15, top 20 prospects just to move the contract. And we saw last year that, you know, they weren't afraid to add a good, cheap, young player. You know, Scott Alexander went in the Joaquin Soria trade so that they could dump that contract. And Ryan Buchter was part of the Brandon Moss contract so that they could dump his contract. And, you know, those are things that teams anymore are kind of asking for. Like, if we'll take on that contract, but you've got to send us somebody who's got some upside and some cost control. And it's not uncommon to see a good prospect go with a bad contract. And I don't want the Royals to end up in the position where they're trading off guys who can be really, really effective 3 or 4 years down the line just because they filled up their payroll for this year with guys they didn't really need that badly and certainly didn't probably need for the price point that they got them at. I don't know. So, you know, I hope he's plenty entertaining, but, you know, I just have to think, you know, it's a little weird. You know, I feel like either of these guys, they could assign them 3 weeks down the line, 6 weeks down the line, and probably save themselves $1.5 million. You know, I don't want to root for ownership too much, but like, if you're setting your limit on what you're going to put towards your team, you know, if you're setting that budget, you know, these are things that kind of chip at that. And again, if it puts them in a position where they have to trade off somebody that could really be impactful down the line when the Royals are trying to contend again, that's just not a good, that's not a good deal in the end. So that's kind of my worst nightmare. If that doesn't happen, if the Royals are just like, they're doing the same thing where they're like, oh, we just can't go past payroll, we can't go past 90, and they end up opening the year with a $99 million payroll, like, you know, most years where they go up 10% or whatever, fine, that's cool. I'll be okay with it. But for right now, I'm just like, I don't know, man. I don't know what they're going to do. But amidst all that, Billy Hamilton should be pretty fun to watch. So you just watch his highlights, watch him defensively, watch him steal bases. Yeah, he'll be really fun. But, you know, the consistency is probably not going to be there. Maybe they get 3 good months out of him, and June, July, they can flip him. You know, it's going to be a one-year deal. It's going to be a couple $1 million, pretty reasonable for a team to take on if they're contending and they want that defensive help, they want that speed on the base paths. But man, I could also see this being a real rough contract where he just doesn't get on base and isn't able to take advantage of that speed, and we're sitting here all summer waiting for Billy Hamilton to get on base and he just doesn't do it. So you know, it's not without its potential disappointment. I won't say risk, because it's like, not like the Royals are going to be losing a playoff spot because of Billy Hamilton. It's like, you know, they're not in the mix for that. But, you know, for the experience of following a team, you know, you want to see your guys do well, even if you're pretty sure they're not going to win a lot of games. And, you know, there's a good chance Billy Hamilton didn't play that well.
Yeah,
he could still play really, really well. He's got that top 50 upside, but, you know, at this point, he's played, you know, 2,700 plate appearances at this point. He's probably pretty close to what he's ever going to be. But, mm-hmm. you know, for 1 year, all right, we'll deal with it.
Yeah. I am rather intrigued by what I was talking about earlier with, you know, Mondesi, Merrifield, Hamilton all being, and like you said, that, you know, if you put Hamilton at nine, and then you can flip him around if he somehow gets on base, and then you've got the top of the order coming up with Merrifield and Mondesi. I mean, that's a lot of speed right there.
Yeah,
and then you, if you can get it to someone, you know, like a Salvador Perez or whoever, and they can, you know, just hit a gapper into the double, then you're going to clear the bases, or hit a double into the gap, then you're going to clear the bases. Or, you know, Lorenzo Cain style, if you hit a single into the corner, maybe
right,
you can still get everyone home with that kind of speed. And it feels like this is the Royals almost kind of like, I don't want to say outthinking themselves, but just kind of like, okay, this is what we're going to try and do. We're just going to try and, you know, get as much on the margins as we can. Let's try and capitalize on our speed. Let's try and get back to the defense again. You know, I mean, that's, they had much better players to do it, but that was, of course, the model that they used in, you know, 13, 14, 15, when they were, you know, winning all those games. So I can see, I guess, if that's their possible kind of line of thought, but I don't know. It does feel weird when you're giving yourself a self-imposed cap for how much you're going to spend, and then just why get a player like Hamilton? And we were talking about this a little bit before the show as well, and we've mentioned on here last year when we had the saga of Mike Moustakas, and was he going to sign somewhere else, and were they going to trade him, and they eventually did. Where they traded him to was actually like the perfect scenario for how we viewed Mike Moustakas, or at least mm-hmm. how we thought other teams viewed him, which is to say, he's not a guy who, he's not a Mike Trout, he's not a Bryce Harper, he's not even an Eric Hosmer, who's a huge difference maker on a day in, day out basis. But he's very good, you know, all-star level, major league baseball player who can win you some games, but he's not going to be that huge difference maker. You know, he makes you better by being on the team, but he's not going to put you over the top, and he's not going to make you a contender by himself. Though not many players can, just because of how baseball is as a sport, but, you know, he's not in that upper echelon, is what I'm saying. And, you know, Billy Hamilton is even further below that, a lot further below that than Mike Moustakas, but similar kind of idea. You know, he's a solid player. He's not bad to have, and there are some of his tools that are big assets that you can have that in the right situation could end up winning you some games. And he has that kind of game changing ability with that speed,
yep.
But, he's not going to do it all on his own. He's not going to put you over the top. So this Royals team, I mean, are they better than they were before they signed Billy Hamilton? Sure. But, yeah. But are they good now because they have Billy Hamilton? No.
No.
So that's where the kind of weirdness comes in. Like, that's the kind of player that when you have 24 guys who are, you know, solid pieces of an 85-90 win team, and then you just need that extra spot filled, and you want somebody who can help you out in the right scenario, you know, your Terrence Gore type, your Jerod Dyson type, exactly like we've talked about. That's where you sign someone like Bill Hamilton. But the Royals aren't even close to there. So I don't know what their goal was here. If it was just – maybe they're trying like you were talking about, where they say, hey, one-year contract, let's see if we can get him in and put him in a position to succeed, and then we'll flip him. I don't know. But it does feel kind of weird because it even though we talk about how much of a Royals thing we it seemed like they would do, and that we knew they would do it, at the same time, it does feel like, you know, why? It's just they're
yeah. And why they're now? I mean, they've got Brett Phillips, who they acquired last year, Brian Goodwin, who they got last year, Jorge Bonifacio, Rosel Herrera, you know, those at Jorge Soler, who will probably DH, but I mean, technically could still play in the outfield. Alex Gordon's still there. It's a lot of guys. It's a lot of guys. And you know, it's probably means that Herrera is the odd man out in the end, just because, you know, he's probably last on that list. And they just signed a utility guy and an outfielder, and those are kind of his things. But, like, that also points to, I don't really see where the need was. Like, I don't see where the big drive to get a Billy Hamilton comes from, unless they're really just hunting the upside and hoping that maybe he plays well and at the end of the year is willing to stick around or something. And then, you know, in 3 years, he's in the same kind of spot as Dyson, as kind of, you know, that speedy defensive guy who, you know, is getting into his 30s but still has all that skill. I don't know. That's a weird way to approach it if I was them. But, you know, I don't know. I mean, I guess it doesn't – the caveat that I go back to is, as long as they're not going to end up having to dump a good prospect or a good young player to move – bigger payroll later this offseason and cost themselves in 3 years versus just this year, then it's whatever, it's fine. But I also feel like that they could have gotten Hamilton for $2 million in a month and a half, or you let someone else, you know, give them the $4 million plus, the $5 million guaranteed kind of deal. And if you miss out, you miss out. So I don't know. It's very weird. It's a weird deal. I don't dislike him. I don't dislike them having him. I just, the circumstances are very strange to me about, you know, why they were so, you know, just driven to make this move. It's very, very strange to me.
Yeah. But here we are.
Yeah.
So we'll see how that plays out, because he does have that game-changing speed. So it'll be kind of fun to see if they can there will be at some point where it'll be, you know, two guys on base and somebody somebody will be at the plate and there'll be a wild pitch or an errant throw, and then there'll be people just running all over the place and there'll be another wild throw and it'll just be craziness and it'll be really fun, and then we'll remember that the Royals are 30 games under 500 and it'll be back to, well, that was fun,
but, oh yeah,
maybe street
awesome, wow.
So we'll see. So that's it for kind of the major news. Hamilton was the biggest piece there.
Yep. He's young, scrappy, and hungry.
Yes.
So, I meant to get these in earlier, and I didn't. I threw away.
You
my
meant
shot.
To what?
I meant to put these in earlier. These Hamilton lyrics.
Oh, gotcha.
I threw away my shot.
So another thing, we won't really touch on this too much, but we are, you know, kind of getting close to the Rule 5 draft. And, you know, there are people that are kind of putting out potential Rule 5 guys. And I don't know, there's a ton of value in really looking at that, because it feels like Rule 5, those drafts, it's hard to predict. On those, it's just kind of like, well, here are the decent players who aren't protected, is more or less what's going on there. But just something to keep your eye on, and you know, keep your ears open for news on that, because it'll most certainly a lot of the,
probably by the time you're listening to this, that's probably what's happening. So.
Yeah. And with you know, the Royals, they made a. Made a couple picks last year, and they've with the moves they've made recently in the last few weeks to month with the roster, it feels like they're positioning themselves to make a pick or two in the Rule 5 draft. And you know,
they get the second pick, so I mean, if there's someone they want, they've got very good chance to get them. I think the Orioles are going to take a position player ahead of them, so that probably puts the Royals going after a pitcher, and then see how it goes from there. But
this is what the Rule 5 draft was really intended for. Teams like the Royals, you know, who you're in a position where you know you're not necessarily going to the 25 spots on your roster are not as valuable in 2019 as they were in 2015, because they're not right. going to compete at that level. So you can afford to have somebody on your roster the whole year and give them some experience and try and maybe hope you get lucky like they did last year. So yep. you know, it's the Royals are the perfect team and in the perfect position to really try and take advantage of this. And I hope that they do, you know, because it's fun to inject some new talent, and maybe they can get somebody that can actually help them. So,
yep. If they find the next Brad Keller, that's pretty good. If they find the next Birch Smith, well, that's probably more likely to happen. But
yes,
you know, they've got innings to hand out next year, and you know, it's not like they're. You know, one loss is not going to hurt their playoff chances. Their playoff chances are pretty slim, so it's just kind of how the rebuilding is going to go. And, you know, maybe yep. they'll get lucky. Maybe they'll hit, you know, they've got two open spots on the 40-man roster. They could certainly go for two picks again and see what happens and, you know, give themselves some opportunity to, you know, to cash in like they did. You know, half their picks last year. So,
yeah,
we'll have more on that once, you know, we get to the next show. But by the time you listen to this, they probably have taken their guy, I would imagine, or are about to. I think it's at like 11 in the morning Central time. And this will probably hit everybody's subscription about 9 in the morning. So if you're listening right away at this stage, they've got about an hour till that pick.
Yes, so we'll and you know, and we've kind of talked about how there's been some theories that the Royals are maybe gearing up for 2020 to be that competitive, get back to being competitive. So, I mean, if you're the Royals and that truly is your goal, kind of throwing everything out there to start the season for 2019, seeing what sticks, and then trying to narrow things down for like, okay, who are your players going to be moving into 2020, and then in the second half of the season, figuring that piece out, along with maybe seeing, you know, what young players are ready to make that leap to the majors, position yourself for 2020. I mean, that's kind of the only way you can do it if you really want to try and be competitive in 2020. So I don't know if they'll get there, but it's certainly that could at least be a reasonable approach if that's what they're trying to do.
Yeah. It's just dump a bunch of talent into a funnel and see what filters out. And then while that's all going on and you're figuring out who gets to stick around, hopefully their prospects, who they got, you know, the last couple of drafts, start to make their way up and really look like that's going to be the next core of players that get them there. And, you know, you make it fit that way. They've got plenty of time to kind of sort some of that out in 2019 and see how it turns out in 2020. It's going to be a weird year, I think. Like, last year was a little bit weird, but it was still a little bit of that shaking off the 2017. And there were still guys like, you know, Moose came back, Escobar came back. So it was a little bit like, all right, it's still kind of the same group. It's kind of like the last season of Scrubs, where it's like,
oh yeah,
it's like there's a bunch of new guys, but okay, Turk's still around, so it's kind of the same
still there,
but it's not, it's really not. So this year it's kind of like a whole new spinoff, and it'll be interesting to kind of see how some guys go. And maybe Billy Hamilton will be a really, really big high point and really fun player to watch, and maybe realizes some of that hitting ability. If he wanted to go out and hit 344 like old Billy Hamilton, he can go ahead and do it.
Hey, I'm totally okay fine with that. Even if he just has an on-base percentage of 344.
Yeah, that's true.
I would 100% take that.
If he does that, he'll still like 80 bases. It's like
easy.
Ridiculous. Easy. Yeah, but he's got to do it. He's, you know, He hasn't done that yet. So, will he? Doubtful, but maybe this is the year. Maybe. Maybe he found the right
spot. You never know.
Yep.
You never know. All right. So I think that's all we have for you this week. So we will leave you at that. And we will be back in 2 weeks. The Rule 5 draft will be over. And we will have winter meetings will be over. So we will have some things to talk about, hopefully. You know, there still hasn't been any huge splashes in the free agency market, and they usually kind of start turning about this time. So we'll see. You know, even if it's not the Royals that are making them, guys like Bryce Harper, Manny Machado being out on the market, you know, that's big news. So we'll definitely talk about that wherever they end up signing, and we will see.
I think the Royals should do it. Just go get Bryce Harper.
You know, now you want to talk about someone who can make you
sign him to a $9 million deal, and if you're not there in 3 years,
1 year, $4.5 million for Bryce Harper.
Nine years.
You said $9 million, I think.
Yeah, if you could sign him to a $9 million deal, that'd be great. But nine years is what I meant. You know, if 3 years from now he's not,
$150 million contract.
Worth a shot. You know, see what happens. Hey, but that's not the kind of thing they would do. But
no,
you know,
not even just to drive up the price.
Right.
So. But yeah, with that, we will leave you. So thank you all for listening so much. And thank you for being with us as we transition into this slightly different, but mostly the same future here, which for those, you know, for those of you that listen and subscribe in different areas, like we said again, not much is going to change for you, if anything at all. So just keep listening, keep updating your subscriptions and all that stuff. And everything should be fine, and you'll get your fill of the baseball vault, which is what we're here for. We're here for you as the listeners. Thank you all so much for listening, and we will see you next time. And until then, you know, if you get that craving for Royals stuff, and if we talk about if the Royals do make some Rule 5 selections, we'll have instant breakdown for that. Still on BP Kansas City. It's still up, like we said, likely through the end of the year. It'll still be up, so you can still go there now and get some immediate news. And then after that, it'll be just BP Kansas City, or I'm sorry, just baseballprospectus.com, where you can get that stuff. So, and we'll keep you apprised of everything as the changes kind of shake out as we move towards 2019. But until then, until next week, we'll see you next time. Thank you all so much for stopping by. And as always, go Royals.
Thank you for listening to the Kansas City Baseball Vault. You can follow us on Twitter at KC Baseball Vault. You can also find us on Baseball Prospectus Kansas City at bpkansascity.com. You can follow BPKC on Twitter at bprokansascity. Also, you can subscribe to the podcast through iTunes, through Stitcher, or whatever podcast app you like. And if you have any questions, comments, or if you just want to say hi, send those emails to kansascitybaseballvault@gmail.com.